We've spent a lot of time talking about the hope and optimism surrounding Wisconsin athletics, but today we're flipping the script because if we're being honest, there are real things that should scare Badger fans right now, real questions about where this program is headed if things don't go the way we all hope they will. I'm Rajiv, he's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we're doing something a little different. Instead of talking about the best case scenarios, we're diving into the things that genuinely worry us about the future of Wisconsin athletics. From football to basketball to the direction of the athletic department itself, we're laying out the biggest fears, biggest warning signs, and biggest questions facing the Badgers right now. And if we have time, we'll also touch on some of the newest football recruits and what they could mean for the future of the program. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button. We've had a lot of really good recent support for the show, so thank you all for that. We appreciate that, like button, subscribe button. It's very, very, very helpful to our show. You know, all that YouTube algorithm stuff, it matters. Couple of quick notes. First and foremost, happy Mother's Day to my own mother, who sometimes watches this, but not very frequently, to my wife, to your mother, Justin, to Anthony's mom, to Ryan's mom, to Aaron Herring's, all the people, all the mothers out there. We don't have a lot of women that look that watch the show, but if you are, and if you are a mother, happy Mother's Day to you. Did you have a good Mother's Day, Justin? Did you spend it with your mom?
I did. Yep. I have a long-standing thing with my parents where on Sunday mornings, I stop by there for breakfast. Nice. So it's just kind of one of those things where I'd go over there and catch up on the week. I started it when my son was little. It was an opportunity for him to be close to my parents. So it was like, all right, he's going to go over there and he's going to get to see him every Sunday morning, have some breakfast with them, and it gives him an opportunity to spend time with them. And it's one of those things that I've just kind of kept going, you know, with that. I am one of those people that's like, I don't talk on the phone. Like, I don't call people and just do that kind of stuff during the week for the most part.
You call us.
Well, occasionally. That's normally when I have an axe to grind. My parents don't want to hear about Badger stuff for hours on end, me incessantly complaining. But when it comes down to it, I normally don't, like, reach out unless I had, like, to bounce thing off people too often. So I catch up with them on Sundays, just kind of be like, hey, how are things going? How was the week? You know, type of stuff. Yeah. Yep. You got flowers for me today.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I went to a nice restaurant on the strip with my wife today. So that was great. Good stuff. Also, I did my first ever Rajiv's Corner episode on YouTube this past week. So go check that out. If you didn't, I talked a lot about the NBA and how awful, absolutely awful it is right now. Will Hannah watched it. Thank you, Will Hannah. I appreciate that. And the expansion of the NCAA tournament, which I also am a fan of, but I do have an issue with it. So go check that out if you want. It'll be another one coming this week on YouTube as well as, of course, on the podcast version. So that's been good. All right. So yeah, a little different. This was Justin's idea today. And I think this is a great show idea because we spent so much time talking about what's good. That it's nice to look, the reality is everything that we think is going to happen in a good way is not going to happen. Everything we think could happen in a bad way is not going to happen. Generally lies somewhere in the middle, but we're going to approach it today and talk about what our biggest fears. So Justin and I each have five of our biggest fears that we're going to just talk through. Put your stuff in the comments. What are your biggest fears right now with the entire athletic department? And obviously react to some of the stuff that we say. And if we get time, we'll touch on some recruits. I got some film pulled up if we get to it. We might not, because depending on how this discussion goes. All right, Justin, your show idea. Love this. Give me your first Wisconsin biggest fear.
So number one will be from an administrative standpoint, just within the university as a whole, that the hires that we make are purely based off of the academic side of things, and that the people who we get in the offices don't fully care about college athletics and the role that they play within the university. I think that is massively something that we all are concerned with, because all it takes is the people at the top saying, like, this isn't as important to me. Like, you guys I don't care about making sure that you have the resources that you have with this. I have other things on my plate that are more important, and things get really difficult again. And I feel like we were making progress on that, that up until now with the NIL stuff and everything, that it would be very concerning to me if somehow we ended up heading in the wrong direction.
It is definitely a fear of mine as well. Like I hear you on that. I think that, like, ultimately, and you guys have heard me say this before, Wisconsin is an academic institution first. It is, if you are a fan of college athletics, this comes with that territory. It is an academic institution for prime first and foremost.
Athletics are part of a holistic college experience.
It is. It is. And yes, like, what I think ultimately for me, kind of my view on your fear is that Wisconsin athletics has been really important to the administration for a while. And if the new one, if it changes, that'd be really sad because it could go down the tube theoretically. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that knowing how much money this brings into the university, knowing how many eyes this puts on Madison, and knowing how, like, how well it puts Madison in a nice light, it will be something that they care about. It will be something that is focused on by the administration. But, you know, there's a lot of hires that have to happen. There's some hires that have happened. I don't know who all they've put in these places yet, but we'll talk about that. But I mean, it's definitely an issue there. And this goes along with my first one, which is, my biggest fear right now is that our athletic director hire is not a home run. And someone, if we end up getting someone that can't play in this NIL world, I think we need to have a nice exhaustive search for an athletic director. Now, if Marcus Sedbury comes out of that search as the top guy, okay. I don't know his qualifications, so I can't speak to whether or not he's absolutely the guy for the job. But I know that he's the interim now. I know that he's well-liked. He is a nice guy. I think that, but my fear is, like, can we have to get someone who knows how to manage the situation. This has to be a different athletic director hire than we've ever made before, because
absolutely
just be like, okay, Wisconsin guy. I don't care whether it's a Wisconsin guy or not. I want someone who understands this system more than anything else.
And I think it can't be a Wisconsin guy, and I'll explain why.
It could be, though.
Well, the reason why I say that is because there's a very Wisconsin way within the athletic department. We've done things for the past 30 or 40 years. You need someone that's coming into this that looks at this from a very big picture view, national perspective of what is everyone else doing in this atmosphere and how do we work within these constraints so that we do not get left behind with everybody else. And I feel like we have a tendency at times, it feels like, to kind of small time it at Wisconsin mm-hmm. a little bit in terms of our perspective of how we need to do things. And you can't do that. Like, you just cannot. Like, sometimes you have to look at things and say, it's going to suck. This is going to be a resource suck to put this into this, but we have to do it. And that's one of those things where I think there's a fear internally at times at Wisconsin where they don't want to take those risks, or they don't want to be somebody who pushes the envelope to start, and they get left behind, and they end up being kind of like when NIL first came out. Wisconsin was like, we're going to work according to the letter of the law, how this all is going to work. And everyone else is like, there's no constraints put into this. We're going to push the limits of this. And if we get pushed back after the fact, so be it. But right now, nobody's put any rules into place. So we're going to work with, like, there are no rules in existence. And Wisconsin got burned by that. And it's one of those things where I need somebody in there who's going to look at this. They don't necessarily have to push the extremes of that, but they need to be aware of what everyone else is doing and say, maybe we won't go that far, but we're going to go a step short of that so that we're at least in the same realm, so that we're not getting, like, annihilated by everyone else who's willing to play the game one way, and we're going to be the only honest person in the room.
Yeah, man. Like, listen, and I've gotten to know people in the athletic department in the last few years, a little bit here and there, but I just want to be totally clear and honest about one thing. I do. Our athletic department, as it sits and as it's been functioning for the last couple of years, is a great athletic department in a different age. Okay. Now it's such a business. It is such a business that there's so much money flowing in and out and buying players and doing this. And we've got guard going overseas to get players. Like, we need a professional athletic department. I'm not saying that people there can't do it. I'm just saying that there has to be a philosophy and a culture in this athletic department that speaks to where we are in college athletics right now. Absolutely. It's that simple. It's pay to play now. So it's like either you're going to do it or you're not. And frankly, there's a lot of schools out there that have done it. You look at our schools that have perennially been below us in the Big Ten hierarchy, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, Indiana, these teams, like they've all kind of begun to figure it out. Minnesota, not necessarily, but Indiana, Illinois, they've definitely figured it out. They are pumping money into their athletic department. They are buying big players. Indiana just won a national title doing this. Like, we have to make that upgrade to our athletic department culture. I'm not saying people necessarily, but if that means people, that means people. So my biggest fear is that we don't do this. And honestly, this probably is my number one fear here. Like,
absolutely,
I don't know that this is actually going to roll the way we want it to roll. And it's tough. And that Zach Bart's good comment up here. This athletic department would kill it in 2006, not 2026. The game evolved. Time to evolve with it, or we'll get left in the dust. This is a great opportunity to step up and set ourselves apart. I very much agree with this take, and I think it sometimes it sounds harsh on the current athletic department, which I'm not saying that it is.
No,
and it might be that if you change the philosophy and you adapt the department as a whole, then fine. Then these guys can do it. But I don't know that we're gonna actually adapt and evolve, and that concerns me, man. It really does. It's my biggest fear.
Yeah, I think you need to bring some people in there that have a very non-traditional view of fundraising and stuff like that, that are open to ideas as to what are alternative ways for us to also bring in additional income streams for the athletic department. Because I feel like at times we just fall straight into the donor hole with this, and we're just like, well, this is how we've done it for the past 30 years. This is how we have to do it to bring money into the athletic department. It's like you look at some of the ways that some of these other schools are attacking this. You have to find as many avenues as possible to bring in those income streams that, you know, as long as you're comfortable with what you're doing. But the point I'm making with that is that I feel like there's times we've had so many players, like former players, say that they've never been contacted and stuff like that. How is there not somebody in there that's like, that's your first move? Is like open that former player dossier and say, all right, we're going to reach out. It doesn't have to be asking, but like, would you be interested kind of thing, to just kind of at least find out who's potentially down for that? Because that is a heavy base that you have a ton of people who have honestly had some great careers that you can get them involved. And maybe there's alternate ways that you get them involved. You have some of these guys where you bring them in to help in the fundraising, possibly, you know, like you just went and did the golf thing. Like, those are opportunities where you have that ability to bring those guys in for exactly that type of purpose. Mm-hmm. This is where it's really important that you have the alumni guys that are former athletes here really involved in things, because it's really hard to say no to those guys when you're talking to a former, you know, star here who's asking for a little bit of something.
Yeah, the golf thing was great. Badger Desert Classic. The Bucky Report was a sponsor of the Badger Desert Classic. So that was cool.
Well, that's all Rajiv. I just want to put that out.
I've got this is a really good comment here. Before we go to our number two one, I think this one's great. And I didn't list this as one of my top five, but a fantastic one from Mr. October. Biggest fear, guardrails are never put on NIL. Caps, contracts have to get limits. They can be policed, but by who? NCAA is a joke. Yeah, listen, I've talked about this a lot over various shows, and I could not agree more. And there has to be some guardrails put on this. And I think that if there's not, we are definitely going to be ones left behind, because we don't have the financial wherewithal, as we've already talked about for the first 10 minutes of the show, you know, that some of the schools like Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, even Indiana now have with guys like Mark Cuban. You got to have the guardrails. And even if we're not left behind, forget that. Just in the sport as a whole needs proper guardrail system. It needs something to actually actually, you know, like govern this sport and to make it watchable. Because let me tell you something, college sports will reach a point of unwatchability if you don't have guardrails. So really good one by Mr. Rocktober there. Any comments on that one?
I think that's extremely important. And I think until we get to the point where we have an idea what we're working with within this, you know, landscape, it's going to be very difficult to truly come up with how any of these athletic departments do things. But you have to figure out who's going to be in charge. There's got to be somebody who has some level of teeth when somebody is acting out outside of things like what Miami's been doing lately, there has to be somebody that's going to be like, we're not going to tolerate this kind of behavior. Like, if you're consistently being somebody who's not doing business or negotiating in, you know, good faith, then we are going to absolutely start to come down on you. And we're going to take things away from you that you're not, that you're actively working against. Like, they're working for national titles right now. Maybe it takes, you know what? We're going to put a postseason ban on you for 3 years and see how you feel about this game. If you can't work within the constraints of what we call the transfer portal, then maybe you don't deserve the opportunity to play in, you know, the postseason.
It's totally lawless right now. It's just lawless mess right now. Okay. Number two, Justin, what is your number two biggest fear?
Yeah. And just to be clear, none of mine are in any particular order.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Same.
My number two is, what if the offense takes a step, but it's not to the level that we need it to this year, and it actively costs us? Because, and this is going to be kind of a two-sided thing here, because I think some of us feel that the defense is going to be really good this year, but if the defense is good and not great this year, that offense is going to have to carry some water. They're going to have to be probably mid to upper 20s for Wisconsin to be able to have a pretty darn good season. And my question is, what if we end up falling back into that 22, 23, 24 points per game offense? I don't think that will be the case, but what if we do? Is that enough for this team to get out of its own way and actively not only get bowl eligible, but be able to be a team that potentially, you know, gets in that 7, 8, 9 win range?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if you see me reacting to anything, the Knights tied it up, and then now the Ducks just took a lead again. So I'm just watching my Vegas Golden Knights up here.
I saw that sneer. I was like, what did I do?
Yeah, no, not at you. Sorry. That's why I had to say that. Not at you. If you see that, it's not at you. Yeah, listen, okay, so first of all, I think that the defense is going to be better, right? So I think that we can withstand not having a 29 or 30 point a game offense. Okay. But I think if we're at 23 again or less, if we're in that range, yeah, we're not going to be able to make that up, because it speaks to a bigger problem. If we're actually really having that low issue scoring issue, that means we could have injuries. That means Colt Joseph just isn't the guy, which obviously, I mean, is a kind of a fear of everyone's, I think, at this point, is that what if he's not that? And that all goes together here. And I think that a couple things. First of all, I think we do have a bona fide young quarterback in Ryan Hopkins that if Colin Joseph gets injured or isn't the guy, that might potentially be able to step in. And I do think that the offensive line is definitely going to be improved. And I got some slight confirmation on that recently, just from talking to some people. I think that it is going to be better. It's not going to be great, but it is going to be better. So I can't really imagine a situation, Justin, where we're not, were we at 20 last year, 19 or 20
points per game?
Yeah, it was lower.
12 or 13, dude.
It's awful. God, Jesus.
You forgot about that, huh?
So bad. That's so bad.
We were like 12.8 or something like that. We were the second worst team in the country.
22 is probably like the minimum for us to have a decent season, right? Like, it probably has to be more. And the thing is, ultimately, how good
25 or 26.
Yeah, like, how good is our scoring defense, though, right? Like, we have
that's elite, a big part of it.
Elite middle linebackers, and from everything that I've heard even recently, a secondary that this coaching staff just loves. So I think that it should be good enough. But yeah, like, if we fall all the way back into the teens, forget about it. Chalk up another 7 loss season. But if it's 25 or 26, I think that's a fair point. But yeah, I mean, the bigger discussion here is, what if Colin Joseph isn't the guy, right? And that is a fear. We have to come to grips with that. I know I'm certainly one who's optimistic, and a lot of Badger fans are like, oh, this is going to be great. Look, let's just be honest. Like, Colin Joseph played at Old Dominion. He's not playing in the Big Ten. We don't really know what that's going to look like when he comes to the Big Ten. And camp was okay, but fall camp will tell us a lot more. This is definitely a fear of everyone's, and I think it's a very fair one. Okay, my second one here is that, switching to basketball a little bit, the international angle hits a brick wall, and guard has to deal with his NIL problem, recruiting locally and domestically, basically. I love what he's done. I love it. I think that it's great that we've got the Hayden Jones of the world, and we've got these the Austin Rapps and all these people that have international experience, especially from down under. That's where he's getting a lot of players, and I respect it. We've got connections there. I like that you've tapped into a resource. But that well could dry up. Other teams with more NIL dollars could realize what we're doing and go do that same thing and start hitting the New Zealand's, Australia's of the world, and that's fine. Obviously, there's other teams doing it in Europe. And we've been striking gold recently in the portal, right? Store, Tanjay, Rap, all that's good. We think, maybe we've done it again, maybe not. Well, we don't know. But that it could really hit a point, man, where this just isn't working anymore. And if that's the case, I don't know how Greg Gard can compete in this NIL era. And maybe it's the offense, but I am fearful of the floor dropping out of basketball, not because Greg Gard's a bad coach. You might think that, but I don't. But because we cannot compete domestically when it comes to the transfer portal, and we're not even close. We're not even close.
Yeah, this is actually one of mine, which is the NIL budget does not move to a point to make up for Gard's recruiting shortcomings, which we saw again Davis. Davis going to Iowa State. That is not a reflection of monetary, from what I've heard. That is a reflection of TJ Elsberger is a better recruiter. And that, to me, is one of those things where you have to look at it and say, Gard clearly has some shortcomings when it comes to when you get to this level of recruit. When he gets other teams that have kind of the cachet to be able to throw around with who they are, he struggles in those rooms. When he gets to go against kind of the Northwesterns or Rutgers is a bad example because they just had those two huge players not long ago, but you get what I'm saying. When he's dealing with the middle of the road teams, he's fine. When he's dealing with teams that legitimately have success to sell, he's just not a guy who lights up a room in that regard. So you've got to make sure that financially he has the resources associated with him, that he can overcome some of that. Part of the reason that Wisconsin has struggled so much with in-state recruiting is that. Part of the reason that they've struggled so much with in-state recruiting is also the fact that, like I just said, when you have Coach K or TJ Elsberger or some of these other guys who are coming in to recruit, they just are more impressive. Gard's more like your dad. Those guys are more like the cool college coach that's running around out there who has stuff. Like Elsberger is still one of those young guys that's kind of moving into the, hey, is this guy going to be one of those that ends up winning a title? And that's where I think that will we ever get to the point where he gets the resources that he needs, or is this going to be one of those situations where Wisconsin is just going to eventually taper off and fall off because he's not the world's strongest recruiter, but he's also not somebody who has the resources to make up for it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you can already see an undertone in everything that we've said so far. The overarching theme of our fears is financial stability in NIL world. Like that everything's got an undertone of that right now because the bottom line is things can be fixed with money in this sport right now. We don't have that, and it doesn't look like we're going to get it. So we put more into football, and this we'll see whether that bears out. But yeah, look, and I want to be really clear on, obviously we've talked about Greg Gard a decent amount. I don't think it's because of Greg Gard. I think it's strictly financial. Like you said that the Davis going to Iowa State. I get that. Like we're going to get outdone by guys like when Coach K came and took Knuppel, and that's fine. But like I think Greg Gard is a decent recruiter, and I think he's a good coach. And I think if you put him with better funding, he would do better. And I like that this international angle is working for him. I'm just worried it's not going to continue working.
I'm not saying that he's a bad recruiter. I'm saying that when he has to go against the guys who are legitimately top tier, he struggles to close. And I think that's been proven out. Like we've seen how many kids from Wisconsin that, hey, Wisconsin leads, Wisconsin's doing great. Then one of the bigger fish jumps in and just takes our lunch. And that's happened to him effectively since he's been here. Now, I will say, Bo Ryan wasn't exactly a killer when it came to a lot of that stuff either. He did, however, recruit at a higher level than Greg Gardner's.
He's also a He's also an elite coach.
I want to make a point. It's also from a different time.
Yeah.
When recruiting was very different when Bo was here versus the Wild West that we have going on now. Like, Bo would probably struggle now in the atmosphere that we're in unless he's selling his legacy, which that's something he has to sell. Like, if he was – obviously, he's too old now to be coaching, but if he was 60 years old or 55 or whatever and had those two Final Four appearances in the championship game to sell, he would get kids to come in simply because he had done that. And that's something that any coach is going to be able to sell as, this is what I'm capable of if you give me the opportunity. And I think you're somebody that can help me get back there. Guard has some work to do, and this is where the postseason getting things done is part of what he needs to develop on his resume to sell to kids a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're not wrong about that. Like, the postseason stuff is just beyond annoying. And I know many people listening to this right now are just, we're just bringing up pain in that crazy NCAA tournament again. Just, yeah, it's really quite frustrating. If we lose to a 12-seeded team wearing purple one more time, I swear to God, I'm going to stop watching Badger basketball.
We're going to face Northwestern or something.
Just cannot do it. First man. Round. I can't. It really is quite frustrating. Okay, what's another one that you've got?
Yeah, for me, honestly, it's one of those things where looking at the climate of sports that we just don't realize what we truly have right now with some of our secondary sports, and that we let things get out of hand and we start to abuse those a little bit. Men's hockey seems to be coming back around. Women's hockey is a dynasty. And you have women's volleyball that are all doing well. Women's softball even had a really big win this last day and made it to
the women's basketball is on its way back. Yeah,
women's basketball coming back. I am concerned with the climate of college sports that those sports all get their legs cut out from under them, because college athletics effectively turns into men's football and men's basketball. And those are the only things that truly matter. And I have a little bit of concern about us heading in that direction, because I don't like that world. Like, that there's a world to me where I look at and I'm like, all the Olympic sports that are at like UCLA and stuff like that, those are things that were important 30 years ago that people looked at and like, those were something that a university could hang their hat on. And it feels like some of that legacy with that we've gotten to the point where people are so jaded with college sports that it's like, well, we need the resources for this other thing, so those can just go. And I don't agree with that. Like, I'm still somebody who's angry that Wisconsin doesn't have baseball because of the way things played out. And I don't care about Title IX when it comes to that. I'm just saying it sucks that we don't have that, because I do think that's a sport that, even if it's not something that's a moneymaker, is part of your university that all the other schools in the Big Ten have. And it makes me feel bad that Wisconsin is the only one that's not in that. So it's one of those things where I'm very concerned that we end up having the athletic department start to let those things slide, or have coaches that feel like they're not getting the support that they need when you have some really, really top end coaches that are in those spots.
I actually, this isn't really a fear of mine, I don't think, because I feel like with the way that we support women's volleyball and both hockey programs, men's soccer, like, I do think that this university cares about these other sports quite a bit. And I think that they're going to lean into it. Actually, I think I'm almost opposite. I think they're going to spend more time leaning into hockey and growing that. Now, obviously, anytime you have success on the court or the field or ice or whatever, like, you're going to then invest a little bit more in those areas. Obviously, our track and field has obviously always been very strong. Cross country has always been very strong. And I do think that, like, those sports are getting the love that they should get. And no, it's not necessarily by us. We're going to give more love to volleyball and hockey this year. I'll tell you that for sure. But I think the university is actually doing a pretty good job of that stuff. Now, I'm not there. I don't know what that's like in person, but I do feel like, from everything that I've kind of just noticed and been around a little bit, I do think this university did an okay job of that. But I hear your fear on that for sure. Okay, one for me. This is my fear. The elite teams, Justin, realize that Ryan Hopkins is an insane talent and he leaves. I really, really, really want Ryan Hopkins to be the QB of the future for Wisconsin. I'm telling you, he is a really good talent. And the coaches, based on what we read at spring camp, based on some conversations I've had, they all see it. They all agree. The dude is, he shocked a lot of people at spring camp. He really did. And you don't think we're not the only ones reading this. Other schools read this stuff too. And other schools saw him at Mater Dei and saw what he did. He was committed to Wisconsin. He stayed with Wisconsin. I know for sure people tried to flip him. I am very concerned that we don't get to keep that guy.
So my pushback on this would be maybe they were interested in him and maybe they read those reports, but they still haven't seen anything. And unless he chooses to go into the transfer portal and drop film, I don't see how any, like, I don't think that somebody's going to proactively target him without having something visually to be like, this is a worthwhile endeavor, because you're going to have players that are in the portal that have film for an entire season's worth of starting versus a guy who may not play it down this year. And I just think that the only time that the guys that are, that don't play get like any real interest is if they were like a five star, because there were a lot of four star guys that left, that were leaving after 1 year this cycle, that really just kind of sat in the portal for a long time. And yeah, they found places, but I don't think most of them were pulled in as starters for some other place. So if he's not going to get a starting opportunity, it's like, well, where is he going?
And that's,
I get your points. Like, if Joseph's really good this year, I do have concerns that he may look at it and be like, I don't want to sit another year.
Yeah, and I think that that's, it's kind of all those things together. You're right. Like, it's not like they're just going to pick him out with from the bench, but if he has to, if he is forced to play this year because Joseph gets hurt and maybe he jumps Deuce Adams, like, then people can see that. And yeah, definitely if Joseph is staying another year and plays, like, I guess my point is that Ryan Hopkins is a real talent, and I don't think he's going to redshirt this year. Maybe, well, the year if he doesn't play, he will. Shirt. Yes, he will. He will redshirt.
Unless there's injuries, he'll redshirt.
So, like, I want him to play at Wisconsin, because I'm telling you, like, I think this is one of the better quarterbacks we're ever going to see at this school. And I just feel like I want that. I want to taste that a little bit. I want to understand what he actually does in our uniform and what he plays. And if he gets picked out by someone, whether just off his modern day film or whether he comes in and plays this year because Joseph gets hurt, I'm going to be so pissed, man. I really am. Like, you know, the camp, great show, obviously. If you, I'm sure many of you listen to this with Temple and Halpern. They talked about, and this is something that I think is interesting. They talked about how Wisconsin's best, I think Zach Halpern said this, Wisconsin's best quarterback that's ever going to play here has already played here. Wisconsin's best running back that's ever going to play here has already ran here. And the receiver, he was talking about Lee Evans, Melvin Gordon, and Russell Wilson. I do not believe that the best quarterback that ever plays here has already played here, because I do think that there's guys, and I'm not saying Ryan Hopkins is going to be the best quarterback that's ever played here, but I think Ryan Hopkins has that kind of ceiling that he could be a really, really good quarterback for us. And I guess my point is, when we get those guys, when we're able to get a guy like Ryan Hopkins, we cannot let him go. And I'm telling you, it is definitely one of my biggest fears right now.
I think I can understand where you're coming from with that. My gut instinct is that there's going to be a decision to make. And this is where it gets really interesting, because with one transfer portal now, you're not going to be able to push him into the spring and then after the spring have him decide to get out heading into next year. Like, if he makes it to spring football, he's in for another year. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he knows he's getting the job after that. So basically, it's going to be December of this year. I think that what's the best case scenario is probably Joseph has a hell of a year and gets some NFL buzz and decides to make the jump. And, you know, maybe as like a third or a fifth round pick or something like that. And Hopkins gets the opportunity to be ready to go next year. I think that would be the best case scenario for all involved. We get a good season. We get him ready, the runway open for him to be able to play next year. it's a really difficult situation. There's so many moving pieces there. And a lot of it's going to depend on his level of growth going into this. Now, based off what we've heard from camp, the poise and his ability to execute is much more advanced than the traditional true freshman. Mm-hmm. And that's great to hear. I am in the same boat with you, wanting to see him stay. I think that we're fairly safe there, but I can understand the apprehension and being the fear associated with it. But I agree with you wholeheartedly on the Wisconsin has seen its best quarterback and best wide receiver. I think both of those are, like, I think you could say the best game we've ever seen from a receiver may have already been played by Lee Evans in the 5-touchdown game. But I don't know that we've seen the best receiver ever here. And I don't know that we've seen the best quarterback. Like, so much of the quarterback is, like, if you're going to lean on it and just say statistically, like, I don't know if that's necessarily how we have to look at it. If somebody ends up getting us into a playoff in, like, the last four teams, that guy's and it has a really great season, that guy's probably going to be the best quarterback that's ever been here, because we look at it and say he took us damn near to a title with his ability. And sadly, Russell Wilson, he was incredible. We lost a couple of games where he had an opportunity to just run away from a couple of teams. We had no business losing to Ohio State.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have happened.
Hugger says he's a former modern day QB. He's got traditional poise you don't get from most QB recruits unless they come from a big name high school program. Got to find a way to keep him. Yeah, I totally agree with this. I think Joseph, I think for me, ideally, Joseph's here for 2 years. Hopkins redshirts. He learns he's number two as a redshirt freshman. And then as a redshirt sophomore, that's when he takes over. That to me is the best case scenario. It gives him 3 years. And then we can talk about Sorgi or whoever's going to take over after that. I think for now, that's my, I want Joseph to be here for 2 years. I'm tired of a single year rent a QB. Okay. I don't want that. Like, I want a 2 year quarterback, which is one of the reasons I like Joseph, because he is here for two. I want in 2 years when Joseph's done, Hopkins better be on this roster, because I'm going to be fuming if he's not. That's it. Okay. Your next one, Justin.
Sure. I guess my next, and I don't want to go down the financial avenue again. So actually, no, I'll switch this up. We went with offense, but what if the defense isn't quite as good as we're expecting it to be this year in football? And I think that that is one of my biggest fears, because I think we need them to be able to hold down most of this. Like, we're expecting the defense to be what carries us through this season. And if that's the case, we need them to be like a top 25 level type defense so that it takes some of the stress off of the offense.
So what do you think that looks like? If the defense isn't good, what do you think that, how do you think that materializes?
I think it's the inability to stop the run consistently. Because given it's the Big Ten, the bulk of the teams that we're expected to win are going to be teams that want to run the football. And
I want to remind you that's been my fear for a while. You seem to be very confident in our ability to stop the run.
Well, this is more of a devil's advocate show for me. I don't agree that that's actually what's going to happen. I'm saying that's what would happen. What happens to this that ends up being a biggest fear. But I actually think the defensive line is going to be pretty darn good. And I think the run defense is going to be pretty darn good, but what if it isn't? And that's where things get a little bit uncomfortable with this team, because I don't know that we feel confident that the offense is going to be able to bail us out in those circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we are definitely, in order for us to have a successful season, the defense has to be what carries us. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the case. And I can tell you that there's a lot of positivity around the program about our secondary, a lot of positivity. So that's really good. We already know about the linebackers. I mean, I think the country knows that we have elite linebackers. And then it's really the question mark is that line. And, you know, I mean, I think that looks like we're in a good spot with guys like Russell and Perkins and such and Poyser. So we should be all right. But yeah, it's probably the number one thing that would take the win total and put it in the toilet. Mm-hmm. Is if our defense is not good, we are going to struggle. Now, our offense should be better, but we're hanging our hat on the Posa Catalano middle linebacker, like lead defense. It's got to be it.
Wisconsin needs to have like a top 3 or 4 defense in the Big Ten this year. Like if we want to have a season where we look at it and they're better than we expected, they need to be one of the top defenses in the Big Ten.
I don't know they need to be one of the top defenses, Justin, because I think there's going to be really, really good defenses always. I think looking at our, and I'll tell you why, because of our schedule, we don't need to be that because we don't play those teams. So
I'm talking more statistically than necessary being like as dominant.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think that like, I ultimately just feel like the teams that are on our schedule, we have to be a really good defense, and we can beat a lot of teams on our schedule with a really good defense. Doesn't need to be elite. Doesn't need to be top two or three in the Big Ten. Top six in the Big Ten defensively, I think will give us seven or eight wins if the offense does their part.
Well, and I'll say this because there's people that like are excited about the game against Notre Dame. If Wisconsin is going to find a way to win that game, it's going to be because the defense is lights out. Like they have to be, like they have to hold Notre Dame to like 21, something like that, for Wisconsin to win that game. Like anything more than that, and you're probably putting a little too much pressure on a newly built offense to be able to go out there and score. And maybe we're wrong on that. I would love to see the offense come out and go gangbusters right from the start. But I think we all feel like if there's going to have an avenue in that game, it's going to have to be because the defense is just takes over from where they were in some of those games late in the season last year, where they're just causing havoc the whole game.
Yeah, I can tell you, speaking of that Notre Dame game, the Bucky Report's going on the road for that game. Justin and I are both going to be in Lambeau Field. How far is that drive for you, by the way, from Fond du Lac? How far is that?
We're in 15, something like that. Geez, it's not that's terrible. It's about the same for Madison.
Great, I'm sleeping on your couch. All right, perfect. Yeah, so we will be there. So hopefully many of you are going to that game because Justin and I are definitely going to be there. I know our good friend Kevin Brown's going to be there. It'll be a lot of fun. I don't think Ryan's going to be there, sadly. He might not make that game.
We'll work on him.
We're working on it. We're trying to get him to come there. If you're listening to this, Ryan, you better get your ass to that game. Okay.
Watch him. My messages.
Oh, I know. Right. For sure. My next one is, and this is like an overarching fear. I think a lot of people have, but it's really kind of where I'm at with this. My fear is we lose seven games again. Luke Fickell's fired. We're back at square one. And hashtag Nebraska. Like, I am so fearful that this program, which already I think has hit rock bottom, but if we haven't hit rock bottom, oh my God, can you imagine what Camp Randall is going to be like if we have not hit rock bottom already? And it gets worse and we win four games this year, or we win five again with a better schedule. Luke Fickell's got to go. And then where are we at that point? Are we really going to be a doormat program? Because let me tell you something. If you don't think that's a possibility, go look at Nebraska. Just go look at what they've lived through for the last 15 years. It's definitely a very like sort of undertone fear that I have. And we've talked about it before because I think signs are pointing the right way. Again, this is worst case scenario. Signs are pointing up. I think we're okay. But man, that would really, really mean the end of a lot of long-term success for this program.
So my perspective on this is pretty simple. I think that the staff understands, especially someone like Grimes, and you and I were talking about before we came on, I think they fundamentally understand how you have to build your team in order to be good. And I think that this is an area that Nebraska has effectively what's been their kind of bugaboo the entire time since they've been kind of in no man's land. You need to be good in the trenches. And during this entire downswing for Nebraska, they have not been good at the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. And you went out and got a five-star quarterback, and guess what? You still sucked because you weren't able to run the football consistently against people. You're not able to just dominate in the trenches and take over games. And that's what gets it done. And if you look at it, Wisconsin has done a pretty darn good job of like the areas that they tend to target. A lot of high school recruiting for high quality offensive linemen. And when they go to the transfer portal, it's for defensive linemen, like are the number one focus, and offensive linemen, like are the areas that they are truly concerned with, is making sure those areas are strong. Quarterback is for Wisconsin has honestly been the biggest issue. And part of our downswing to a ridiculous standard here is just not having the depth in that room. And
injuries.
But then the depth too. Yeah. It's just, you've never had a second quarterback that you feel is competent enough to kind of not carry the team, but be efficient enough running your offense to put you in a good position. So, yeah, I think from that, in that regards, I have a hard time seeing us lose that many games, but I can appreciate the fear because you're not wrong. If this has to restart, I think we both feel strongly that's probably going to be Jason Eck or someone like that they go after, who I think I'm very curious if the reason why he didn't – like I got to believe there were some offers, or maybe he just was laying low, not thinking about taking jobs, thinking that, hey, maybe Wisconsin opens in another year if I just stay here. And maybe he just – quite frankly, wanted to stay at the same location for more than 1 year because he had just made a couple of jumps and he felt like it was too much to continuously jump to a third spot right away, which I get. It's got to be super stressful rebuilding an entire roster in an offseason like that when you're jumping from one school to the next and everybody's out the door. The Nebraska stuff, I think Wisconsin will always fundamentally be slightly different because what we hang our hat on is offensive line play. And I think as long as you don't go Phil Longo or go in that regard and the other, like whoever you bring in has an understanding that we need to be able to run the football too. Like I think you can be more pass happy, but you need to be very concerned with offensive line play is what we're going to hang our hat on. Then you can be strong offensively here and get things together.
Yeah, I can tell you that I'm very confident that the low point of our offensive line play is definitely behind us. Like, listen, we're not going to be a great offensive line. We are going to be better this year for sure. And we are. And if you just look at the 25 recruiting class, look at we're clearly going to replacing that premium on offensive line again. And the identity of the school has to be that way. So, yeah, I don't see us going down that rabbit hole. There's a lot of comments about how we basically are Nebraska right now. And you're right. Right now, we really are. But the difference is that they've had like 10 years of this nonsense, 15 years of this nonsense. Like, remember when we crushed them in the Big Ten championship game? Like, they've been down for a while. They've tried to come back up, but they can't.
2016 or something like that was the last time.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm saying here is not necessarily that things have been up to snuff. I'm saying that we understand the areas that you need to actually focus on in order for the team to get back to being relevant, which is you need to work the trenches. You've got to develop the trenches in order to do that. And that has never in the time that we've watched since Nebraska has had their downturn, have we heard them say, hey, we're going to focus on building the trenches and being a dominant football team at the line of scrimmage. That has just not been a thing that we've heard from any of the coaches that have taken over at Nebraska.
Yeah, good comment from Mitch Ames. Mateo seems to understand the stress and stress fundamentals. Agreed. Everything that I've heard about Mateos is very, very strong.
Very fundamentally focused.
Yeah, man, for sure. And look, I told you, I think that like the offensive line's definitely improved. There's no doubt about that. Like, I'm worried about depth still. I've said that many times, but
I haven't I haven't heard a great deal of what's the difference between him and Blazek. The biggest thing that I've heard is that Mateos is much more apt to bust these guys' balls on their technique. He is very much on their case if he doesn't like the way he sees something, and making them do it again and do it right. And it sounds like players were kind of saying, hey, yeah, it's night and day how much he stresses that stuff. And I think that that's going to be part of the reason why some of the younger guys maybe take a bigger step than we were expecting heading into this season.
Yeah. Do you have any other fears written down? I've exhausted my list.
I'm pretty much out of it at this point.
All right. So put your stuff in the comments. I'm curious what everyone's thoughts are on your biggest fears. I want to ping you on this one, Justin, kind of moving on from this a little bit. We were going to talk recruiting, but we don't have time to pull up the film. We'll do that soon. We got film pulled up. We're going to watch Sorgi. We're going to watch Hill. We're going to watch Zaccagnino. I don't know how to say his name.
Zaccagnino?
That can mean you. There you go.
It's a shot in the dark. I don't know.
So we will talk about that. But I wanted to ping you on this, Justin, because I talked about this on my show in the midweek. And I just wanted your thoughts on the expansion of the NCAA tournament. Let me just kind of set this up a little bit if you're not familiar with it for everyone out there. It's going to 76 teams. Okay. So we're going from 68 to 76. There are 12 play-in games. And from what I understand, which I really hate this, six of the play-in games are going to be for the at-large bids, the 11s, 12s, 10s, like that whole thing, the large bids. The other six are going to be for the low 16 seeds, like almost all the 16 seeds are going to have to play their way in, and a couple of 15 seeds. So my take on this, and I hate that. I got a good comment. Go Knights. We got a goal. There you go. I got a really good comment on my show about like how the 16 seeds that play that play-in game, they get money from that. So that's why they kind of like it. I think that if you earn your way to the tournament at an automatic seed, you shouldn't have to play in a play-in game. Now every 16 seed's got to play in the play-in game. Come on, man. Like these guys want to celebrate. They want to go up and face the Michigan States, the Kansas, or the whoever the number one seeds are. Come on, don't make those guys play a play-in game. You want to make it exciting? Make the play-in games for all those at-large bids. You throw in 24 at-large and say, now you guys play out for it. That is exciting. That's drama, and that's what I like about it. I'm okay with the expansion. I'm not okay with more of the 16 and 15 seeds having to play play-in games. Your thoughts?
So my thoughts are pretty simple with this. If you're going to expand like this, what I want to see is I want to see some of those smaller schools that have had ridiculous seasons that maybe lost their conference championship game get put into this.
Good point.
I don't want to see 18 and 14 crappy Power Four team make it into this. Screw that. They have their opportunity during the season to not suck. I want to see the 28 and 4 team that ended up blowing it against the team that was like 26 and 7 or whatever that was in their conference and didn't make it in, and say, all right, you get new life. They get the at-large bid, so they're going to be in the 64, but you get to play in the play-in games and get your opportunity to get seeded in. And that's what I want to see, because I don't care about these Power Four teams. None of them are good enough. Like if you finished under 500 in your conference, you don't deserve an opportunity to do this. Realistically, you don't deserve an opportunity in the NIT. But hey, there's money to be made on it, so you'll get the opportunity to do it. Like it's stupid.
It's an interesting take, and I had not thought about that take, and I appreciate what you just said. So on my show earlier in the week, I did say that I actually have no problem with the 500 teams getting in, because it's more opportunities for Big Ten teams who play a gauntlet of a schedule to get in there. Your point, however, is not wrong. They probably don't deserve to be in there anyway. I love what you're saying, your take here about like Miami of Ohio, for example, or like a team that was a number one seed in the SWAC conference or whatever, if that's a real conference. And then they go to the championship, they lose, but they had a great season. They would have got in. It's like, yeah, give them a chance. I'm actually okay with that. I like madness. I like the idea of people having a chance to get in there. I think that's a really interesting take. I had not thought about that, but I don't think that teams that automatically qualify should have to play in. Why do you have to play in?
I agree with that.
Like, you qualified. Listen, the NCAA sets the damn rules. Set the rules. You get 32 qualifiers.
They're going to say, well, you're in the tournament. And it's like, nobody views those other games the same as being in the 64.
Damn straight.
It's kind of a slap in the face to those teams saying, like, all right, it's like being at Thanksgiving and being set at the kiddie table is basically what it is. Like, oh, we're all the big teams. We're going to put you in the 64. You guys get to sit here. And if you're like the 16-year-old who, you know, Uncle Jim couldn't make it this week, you get to come and sit at the big kids table after he doesn't show up.
Yeah, totally agree. We'll do it. That'll do it for the show today. Justin, any final thoughts on anything related to the biggest fears or anything else we've talked about today?
Well, one of the reasons we did this show is to talk about, because we've been very positive about a lot of the things that have been happening within the program. And I wanted people to understand, when we look at stuff like this, we are looking through the lens of this thing, but we're more objective about this stuff than I think people give us credit for. I think about these things, even when I admit I'm kind of in a more positive mindset coming into the season, but I'm also looking at it from the context of what did I hear from people who have watched the team in the last 3 years in person, and how do they look at it compared to those teams? And that's why when I hear things are different this year, that's why I look at it and say, all right, it sounds like we're starting from a better place than we have the last three seasons. That does not mean that the results on the field are going to change anything. And I want to be very clear. I have not put out a record that I expect for this team. And I won't really feel strongly about it until we see them against Notre Dame about what I think of them as a team. But as of right now, it feels like this is a more competent, cohesive roster than we've had in a while. And I feel good about that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I am like all about positivity. But I agree. I think that at the end of the day, there are a lot of different avenues and a lot of different ways that this entire season can go. And frankly, our entire athletic department can go. I love Wisconsin more than anything else. I'm very, very, you know, I very much want to see Luke Fickell succeed. I want to see Greg Gard continue to do what he's doing. But there is a real possibility that things are just not going to work out that way. And I think it was a great idea for the show today to talk about what our fears are and how they materialize. And you can see it. You can see a path, honestly, to a 4-8 season potentially. No, that's not going to happen. But you could see a path to the football program going down, the basketball program. Like it's all out there. Part of saying that is we have to make sure it doesn't, right? The university has to make sure it doesn't. And listen, we are limited what we can do as fans, but the school has to make sure that this path of negativity that we just talked about in the last hour does not actually happen. And we can actually get back to what we're going to do. Otherwise, we will take years of dominance in the Big Ten and turn it into years of irrelevance in the Big Ten. And that just cannot happen.
So Rajiv, I have three comments that I starred here earlier in the show.
Oh yeah, please bring them up.
So first things first here from Nick Flahive, 8903. Yeah. My fear is another QB injury. I don't think this program can survive another year of that. It's the ultimate soul crusher. I think that this is the best quarterback room we've been set up for a season to be able to withstand a injury. I think if Deuce had to play, we'd feel okay. I think if Hopkins had to play, we'd feel okay about those circumstances. That does not mean they're going to play at an incredibly high level, but I think we feel that they'd get competent quarterback play from either one of those guys if they had to be on the field.
Yeah, I think, yes, we'd be better because the room is deeper. But God, emotionally and psychologically, if this was the starting quarterback again, holy shit, man, we can't do that. That cannot happen again.
It can't, but I'm just saying that we're in a better place than we've been in a while. The next comment here from Badger Fanatic 1, do you think Conan and Brown commits to us? I think they're both in play. Everything I've heard is that they're Wisconsin is in very good position with both. It's so hard to know with any of the in-state recruiting. It really, to me, comes down to how badly they want to play for Wisconsin. Like I legitimately think, if it comes down to money, both of those guys are going to be able to command something. And it's going to be how far Wisconsin's willing to go. I think Brown is the scarier one out of the two of those because he's a really good player. They're both good, but like Brown is a pretty high pedigree. And it's going to be, if we're competitive there, does he want to play at Wisconsin? Because if that's the case, then he'll be playing at Wisconsin. And I think that that's where we've kind of changed over the last 15 years. There's far less players that grow up wanting to come play at Wisconsin and being a part of the history of Wisconsin sports. And that's been problematic for them being able to get some of the better players in the state.
Fair enough. And what's your last comment?
And the last one here from T-Temp44. Go tell Patrick Urban, the crew, the podcast crew doesn't think they're professional enough. You forgot to stay at a Holiday Inn. Listen, what I'm going to say about this is I never said that they weren't professional. I think they're all extremely professional. I've met all of them. I'm saying you need an outside voice that is looking at things from a new perspective to come in, because I think that there is a very Wisconsin way of doing things, and you need somebody who's going to have a voice that isn't necessarily as ingrained in that as what we've seen over the last long, because this is a different world than 2005. You need somebody who's kind of been at some of these bigger picture atmospheres, whether that be the SEC, whether that be playing in a different sports league like the NFL or, you know, Major League Baseball or whatever. Like, I feel like you get somebody that's involved in some of those areas that understands, you know, financial aspects at that degree is just a different world than it is at a university. And you get involved with some of those things, you get somebody that has a different perspective and brings different ideas to the table than what we've traditionally seen at the college level, which hasn't done business this way, to be clear, until recently. And all these other leagues have worked at the fundraising and advertising and marketing aspect of it far more for a far longer period of time.
Yeah, all very well said. First of all, let me tell you this, T10. Patrick Herb is a legend. That dude is incredible at his job.
And I hope he's a great guy. I love the people I met at school.
I hope he never leaves Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. He is so good. And yeah, I agree. I think ultimately it's about the culture of that, of the entire department, and being able to move as a unit, as a department into the age of NIL. It's not that the individuals that are there are not there. It's just that it's about whether the whole setting from administration down, like from all the way down, like, are we prepared and do we have the right people to work in this era? It's not that the people themselves can't do that. It's just that, are we as a cultural department ready for that? Okay, we will leave it there. Check out Reggie's Corner coming again this week, and we'll be back again next week. Next week, we're going to focus on recruiting and talk a lot about all these guys. We're going to show film of these guys and then go into everything before OVs coming up very soon. With that, thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.